From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 8 days ago, and let's be honest, it feels like 8 months ago. The saga of Judge Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination has been a grind, and it has brought a surge of emotion from just about every quarter of the country. But last week, at least for me, something interesting happened. While most people were focusing on various and obvious points of the testimony, the kinds that showed up on SNL sketches and elsewhere, the kinds of testimony offered by both Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, attorneys were keying in on things that maybe the rest of us might not notice or really focus on. One Rochester attorney contacted me to point out that Judge Kavanaugh was continually claiming that the alleged participants in the party have all said it didn't happen. But that's not what they have said. Even Mark Judge says he can't recall. That's a markedly different claim. And the attorney urged me to consider the difference and what it meant that Judge Kavanaugh was conflating the two concepts. Other attorneys urged me to keep my focus on the question of evidence and corroboration. Time and time again, they wrote to me saying that the legal community saw the testimony of Dr. Ford as compelling, but is more sensitive to the question of penalizing anyone in any way, job interview, criminal court, or otherwise, based on claims that cannot be substantiated or corroborated. So I thought it would be helpful this hour to listen to attorneys discuss what they heard in the evidence, in the testimony, in the ensuing week. And as you've been hearing on NPR, the Senate voted 51-49 for cloture, effectively setting up a final confirmation vote this weekend. If the members of the Senate vote just as they did this morning, Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed this weekend. I'll say hello now to our guests for the hour. Sharon Stiller is a partner and director of the employment law practice at Abrams Fensterman. Sharon, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also with us is Chris Thomas, a partner with Nixon Peabody. Chris, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
Melanie Wolk is a partner with Trivette Christo. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
And Sharon Kelly Sayers is a local attorney who owns her own firm, the law firm of Sharon Kelly Sayers. Welcome to the program.
Welcome.
And let me just also point out of the gate here, all four of our guests here are representing their own opinions here. They're not speaking for a firm. They're not speaking for a practice. They're here to sort of comment and analyze as they have seen it from their own perspective only. Let me go around the table, and I'll start with Sharon Kelly Sayers and just ask you what stands out most to you when it comes to either the evidence, the testimony, or otherwise in the last couple of weeks.
I think what stands out most to me is his judicial demeanor. I had raised my children to say, you will mess up. You'll mess up a lot. It's not how you mess up, it's how you handle it. And I didn't think that Judge Kavanaugh got that message, and the way that he handled it was contrary to what lawyers look for in judicial temperament, what other judges look for in judicial temperament, his anger, his accusations of a conspiracy out to get him left me greatly concerned for his qualifications.
I'm sure your colleagues will say more, but just kind of quick little show of hands here. If you were arguing in front of this judge, given what you saw last week, would you be confident that he would always, or your colleagues, that this would be a justice or a judge in a courtroom setting who could be impartial, given what you saw?
I wouldn't want to identify myself as a Democrat.
Yeah. Okay. So you would not be comfortable. Okay. Anybody else uncomfortable?
Or have a an obviously liberal issue before the court. I mean, I think he's made it fairly clear that he's going to trend a different direction.
And but that's not unusual on the Supreme Court.
No, not at all. But in terms when he gets confirmed, and he's going to be confirmed.
Yeah, we've known that from the start, right?
I think that lawyers are going to be making a calculation when they're talking about their cert petitions, and if their cert petitions get granted, they're going to be counting his vote as the fifth vote on a conservative side, and they're going to be making a determination as to whether they even apply for cert to the Supreme Court. Knowing that there is going to be, in a liberal versus conservative type case, a 5-4 vote against him.
All right, let's go back around the table. Sharon Stiller, what stands out most to you from the last couple of weeks?
I think what stands out to me the most is what it means to get advice and consent. So the Constitution provides that the president can't appoint somebody to the United States Supreme Court without the Senate's advice and consent. It's not the same as a criminal trial with a burden of proof of beyond a reasonable doubt, or a civil trial with a burden of proof of beyond the preponderance of the evidence. But And there's really very little that defines what advice and consent is. So what was most interesting to me, what stands out the most, is that the need to rush to a resolution seemed to outweigh the need to get enough information to not only satisfy the Senate, but to also satisfy the public so that the public would have trust in the judge.
Okay. Melanie?
What's interesting to me at this point is that his confirmation may come down to the vote of two women, Senator Collins and the other senator from Alaska.
Murkowski. Yeah.
Murkowski. Yeah. And that's very interesting because that's putting these two women in a very unusual spot. They are both Republicans. It's been very clear since Trump has taken office how he feels if people do not vote on those party lines. And yet you see them as women who are having a very hard time making this decision. And as we heard today, you know, one of them chose to vote that they know he shouldn't move on to the Senate. And this is going to be very interesting how these two women handle this, whether they choose to vote down a party line or vote with a little bit more of the feeling of who they are as a woman.
Yeah, and on those lines, listeners, at 3 o'clock today, this is at least the latest information I have is that Senator Susan Collins has said that at 3 p.m. today she will make a speech on the floor of the Senate and reveal how she plans to vote in the final confirmation vote. And so I guess we shall see there.
That's a really tough spot to be in. And I don't envy them. It's got to be very hard to figure out if you're going to vote with your conscience, your gut, your soul and heart, or if you're going to take that vote down party lines.
Okay. Chris Thomas.
What stands out to me above all other things is that elections matter. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, President Trump was elected, and once he was elected, it's his obligation and duty to nominate candidates to open positions on the federal judiciary. It's not just the Supreme Court bench that he's had appointments to. He's had scores and scores across the federal judiciary. And, you know, it is telling that the president has been looking to highly conservative and ideological groups such as the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation to vet his judicial nominees. The bottom line is there's nothing illegal about that. There's nothing even wrong about that. It is the simple result of having won an election. If you don't like what's happening, get out there and vote a different way. But the bottom line is, you know, we're looking at, you know, Judge Kavanaugh being on the bench for probably 35 years, and that is a very significant impact of an election that the president won.
We have the phone ringing, and we're going to take some listener feedback questions for our panel of attorneys if you want to do that this hour. And you can call the program. You can email us, connections@wxxi.org. Can I ask our panel to address that question that another attorney brought up to me about a week ago, this idea that throughout his testimony, Judge Kavanaugh repeatedly said, look, everyone who was supposedly at this party have all said that it didn't happen. When their testimony, even Mark Judge, is, I can't recall. And Sharon Kelly Sayers, I'll start with you. What's the difference there in that gap, and how is that significant to you?
Oh, it's a huge difference. And it's a very telling difference. Judge Kavanaugh actually said that these people refuted. That is an out-and-out lie, which goes to the heart of his integrity and raises the question, does he even have the integrity? If a judge isn't able to get the facts straight or to see the facts in an objective manner, then he shouldn't even be a town justice, let alone on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay. Sharon Stiller?
So I agree that there's a big difference between how the testimony of witnesses was framed and what we understand it to be. The not being able to recall is vastly different than saying that something did not happen. Saying something didn't happen is an affirmative statement. No, it didn't happen. Saying I don't recall, it's too long ago. That's different, and it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. The other point that I'd like to make about that is that the there was criticism saying it's a he said, she said situation. Much of life is a he said, she said situation. We require jurors to make decisions in those circumstances all of the time. And it is maybe a statement about the times, maybe a statement about how you can present facts in a particular way to try to sway the Senate or the public. But it is wrong to believe that things don't happen or things didn't happen just because they didn't they weren't televised on your by video on your phone, whatever.
Okay, Melanie.
You know, I think this this knife cuts both ways because, as we all know, as attorneys here, it is really hard, if not impossible, to prove a negative. It's something you just can't do. And I think while I would have chosen very different words for Kavanaugh and Kavanaugh's use of them, he didn't really express that. And that sword cuts that other way for Ms. Ford because she doesn't have another person that can say, I saw it, or will say they saw it. And that creates that concept of doubt that we always talk about in criminal matters. But as we were speaking before, this isn't a criminal matter. This is whether we are looking at one human being and whether that human has the right integrity, demeanor, and all the other things that come to the table to be a Supreme Court judge. And when you're looking at that accusation, you can't and you shouldn't look at it in a vacuum, which would be simply looking at it and saying, there's only one person saying this or two and we can't prove it. That the mere fact that it's out there means that you have to look and investigate it and not put a timeline on it, not put 5 business days, 6 business days. You really look into who this person is and who he was when he was younger.
Sharon, you want to jump back in there?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out the difference between, it's my understanding that there was a memo put together by the, quote, prosecutor, also referred to as female assistant, about whether the evidence that was presented at the hearing would have been sufficient to prosecute. It's a totally different question. It's like mixing metaphors. And you don't have those kinds of limitations when you are seeking advice and consent.
Okay. Chris Thomas.
Well, if Judge Kavanaugh had said that in court, let's say he were on the witness stand, whether it would be in a civil case or in a criminal case, and he misstated what other parties said, he would have been blown up on cross-examination. I mean, he just would have gotten shredded by a decent cross-examination. But that's not the venue that he was in, and he knew that that was not the venue that he was in. And I think that he was playing to a different audience. The audience wasn't even the Republican senators. It was to a broader national audience.
Yeah, the American public. Is that okay with you, though, that he was conflating they can't recall versus
no.
It didn't happen?
No. It's not okay. But I think that's what was going on, and I think that word, we've heard that word conflation now around this table probably 4 times. And I think that what the president was doing a couple of days ago when he was talking about, when he was belittling Dr. Ford
yeah.
Right, was conflating a criminal standard, which is the beyond a reasonable doubt standard.
The due process stuff, yeah.
And what's going on here, which is basically a really high-profile job interview for a really important job. Two totally different standards, two totally different concepts. But by conflating that beyond reasonable doubt kind of concept, it ties closely into something that all Americans know and understand, but apply and believe in, but applying it in the wrong context. So I think that what we're seeing here is this willingness by both Judge Kavanaugh and the president and some of the other folks who are ideologically aligned with them to conflate these two things to confuse the issue to have a final result that they want.
Let me just add one more thing. And in a moment, I'm going to get to your phone calls, which are, the phones are burning up this afternoon. But let me just say, from the perspective of some attorneys I have spoken to, They tell me that they don't see, that they don't think practically there should be a difference in this case. That they understand that this is technically, quote unquote, a job interview. It's not a criminal prosecution. But their view is it is such a serious matter and a potential slippery slope that if you deny this position without any other corroboration, without more than Dr. Ford's testimony, compelling or not, that it invites a sort of game in the future. And Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, even threatened Democrats and said, we'll do it to you if you can take down Kavanaugh, which is a sort of a kind of a ghastly thing to threaten, but it's out there. And so when I talk to some attorneys, their view is that, no, it should be beyond a reasonable doubt. Otherwise, you can't deny this man, even though it's not a criminal prosecution. It sounds like the attorneys in this room do not agree with that.
So part of the issue for attorneys is we're used to trials. We're used to cross-examination where you can challenge the veracity of what somebody's saying. We're used to due process, things of the sort. But that is not written into what advice and consent is. So it all depends on what you want to bring out and what's necessary for the court of the Senate's opinion as well as the court of public opinion. And there is a lot more that could have been brought out. We all know that. Sharon, you're dying to say something.
Yeah, Sharon Kelly Sayers.
We've litigated together so I can tell when she's ready to fall out of her seat.
Both of the Sharons here gets confusing, I know. But because of Judge Kavanaugh's reaction, which I've already criticized, he prevents us from taking the next step, which is if he said, if I did anything like that, if I drank too much and I can't remember it, and he prevents us from getting to the next step, which could have been resolved in his favor, possibly, which is it relevant? Do we give him points for the fact that it was in high school and since that time he's matured and there are no such allegations of that nature have come forward since then? We can't even reach that, and that may have been resolved in his favor more comfortably than the he said, she said that he set up with his reaction.
And this isn't the first time that these sorts of issues have arisen. I mean, it's the first time that I recall that sex abuse and sex assault has arisen. But think about the whole nanny tax issue from almost 20 years ago. Well, 20 years ago, if you didn't pay your nanny taxes, you weren't going up in the federal judiciary. 20 years ago, if you admitted to smoking weed, you weren't going up in the federal judiciary. This is just a new issue and important, and those were important social issues at the time that got some traction. And this is an important social issue of the day that is getting traction.
And if you go into politics, you have to have a thick skin, whether it's as any branch of the government. And people are expected. We want people to be vetting our candidates for anything, including the United States Supreme Court. That's why we provide an absolute privilege in defamation cases for commenting on public figures versus commenting on things that are not in the public eye. You know what's going to happen when you put yourself out there.
And while you didn't say it specifically, I think what you're also intimating is that, in fact, judges are political people. And I remember one of my first experiences in law school, freshman year or first year in Civ Pro. My professor said, "Keep in mind, folks, that a lawyer is just a judge who got involved in politics." Okay, so even our judges are political.
Melanie, go ahead.
Judges is the lawyer who got involved in politics.
Yeah, judges are just lawyers who got involved in politics.
Let Melanie jump in.
I think we also have to be very careful with the Me Too movement and everything else. We're lumping sexual assault and sexual harassment into the same basket, and they're not the same thing. While neither of them are any better than the other, when we're talking with an assault, it's very different than a harassment and a perception, which often comes into a harassment claims and how one may perceive certain comments and ways someone may have given those comments. When we're talking about an assault, it is actually a physical assault on a human. And that's what he's accused of. This is not being accused of sexual harassment where someone could have misunderstood his statements or interpreted them in a way he did not mean them, or he's in high school or college and he's joking around. You know, we all kind of can comprehend that, and it would be a very different argument. But we're talking about a gentleman that's been accused of sexual assault, and I don't care if he's 17, 18, or 45. That's something that has to be addressed.
Let me now let some of our listeners weigh in, because we've got a lot of phone lines filled up, and I'm going to start in Shalott with Jimmy. Go ahead, Jimmy.
G7, I got to tell you, I was going to go eat some lunch, but listening to your panel, I think I'll skip. That was a whole lot of hot air about nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't buy her story for one second. She's a set-up patsy. Kavanaugh's going to be a great Supreme Court judge to restore the Constitution, and the American public sees right through it. Okay?
Stay there for a second. Jimmy, I appreciate the phone call. Anybody want to weigh in? Because some of our panelists, all of them attorneys here in Rochester.
Jimmy, why don't you believe her? Or anything about it?
Okay, here we go. 35 years ago, where was she on the police report or the security report? 35 years later, she goes to the Democrats and never the cops? Come on, counselor.
My question is, do you believe that any of the women were harassed by Weinstein? Do you believe that happened?
Oh, yeah, he's a pig, absolutely.
Okay, so those women waited decades, didn't they?
This is a little deeper than a Hollywood producer. This is a little deeper than a fraud Hollywood producer.
But is it? They waited decades to come out. And they didn't go to the police when they came out. They went to the media. What's the difference?
Okay, the difference is with the George Soros, world globalist media, okay? They are starting to set a precedent of males hitting on females and touchy-feely. Now we can pull this out of the pile of cards at any time we choose to nail anybody. And I pray to God it's not your son who walks down the street tomorrow and brushes up against a chick.
You know what? I have a son, and I appreciate what you're saying, Jim. Jimmy, I appreciate that, because I've got to tell you, I do think we're in a society now where men particularly have to be, I think they're overly anxious with how anything they say or do can be interpreted, or what they've said and done in the past. So
well,
I can understand that position
innocent,
you're in.
I would say so. Yeah, when you're guilty, counselor, before innocent, and due process is out the window because a bunch of DNCs are scared about losing a grip on this country and restoring it to the Constitution, that's the issue here.
Unfortunately, he's not going through due process right now. He's going through an interview process.
So, Jimmy, I want to ask you a quick question, okay?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sure.
All right.
So, I don't buy a second of her.
Okay. So you're at 0%. So if I were to ask you on a scale of 0 to 100%, what percentage do you think what she said is accurate?
Zero.
Okay.
None of it.
Okay.
She's as responsible for
her party. No, I'm listening. I'm with you, but let's keep through this here. So then the next question I have is, if we're in a court of law, beyond a reasonable doubt is the standard. If this is a job interview, if you and I run a company and we've got allegations against someone who's applied for a job, what is the standard? So I might say, look, Jimmy, I like this candidate, but I'm 25% sure he actually assaulted somebody. And even at 25%, that's too risky. We can find another candidate. What's your standard? What's the number?
Evan,
yeah.
Here we go. I am 30 years down the road. I'm 0% sure it's baloney.
I'm with you.
I'm telling you right now.
I'm not talking about Ford Kavanaugh now. I'm talking about, generally speaking, if you and I are running a company and we've got to make a decision on a hire, how much do you think it's too risky to make the hire if there's allegations? If you think, you know, I'm 90% certain those allegations are bogus, but I'm 10% thinking maybe it's true, do you move on when you know there's another pool of qualified candidates?
No, because we're not going to sidestep the issue here. We're talking about Kavanaugh. We're not talking about some guy for a job interview. I am talking about right here, right now, Kavanaugh. Okay. It's baloney. It's a setup. I'm not going to sidestep. We're not going to have generalities on this. Okay.
All right. Well, I got you, Jimmy. I take the point. I mean,
I think Jimmy makes a point that is, you know, worth reiterating, and that is, he is clearly ideologically predisposed to President Trump. I mean, anyone who's raising sort of the George Soros trope clearly has a very right-wing perspective, and I think that that's exactly how this discussion is breaking down, and that's why I was saying that elections matter. You know, the fact of the matter is President Trump got elected, and they've got the votes to put him on. I think ultimately it's a power play. where they're going to whip those votes in order to get him across the finish line.
Well, hold on. I got a listener who thinks you're dead wrong there,
okay.
Counselor Thomas, and that's Bruce in Irondequoit who wants to push back. Go ahead, Bruce.
Let's hear it, Bruce.
In all this discussion that President Trump got voted and he has the right to put out people for nominations, where was all that when Obama had a nomination that was sitting there for an extended period of time? And it was ignored by a Congress that basically ignored the Constitution. So you can say, oh, it's just a matter of election
balances.
You know, I guess you can go back and say, well, you didn't vote enough people of conscience in so that they would actually let that nomination go through to a vote, yes or no.
So
where was that? Oh, it's just about elections, and you lost in regards to that.
Okay. Fair question, Bruce.
I'm going to answer this one like a lawyer. So the answer to that is that the Constitution doesn't give us a lot of guidance on this stuff. It really doesn't. And maybe that's because the forefathers didn't envision that anything like this would be happening. But with respect to President Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland, the Constitution doesn't say you have to decide on it, and you have to decide on it or give advice and consent within any particular time. It says that the president cannot appoint without advice and consent.
And Bruce, my point there is that, again, elections matter. Who controlled the Senate at that point? Was it the Democrats? No, it was the Republicans, and so they were able to jam it up.
It's checks and balances.
Exactly.
And when checks are all in one party's favor, whether it be the Republicans or Democrats, that's how this is going to break down and start moving or not moving.
All right, but on that subject, Sue in Fairport wants to keep that thread going. Go ahead, Sue.
Yeah, I mean, if the Senate is indeed responsible for advice and consent, they choose to ignore a nomination for a duly elected president. I mean, I think that they're talking out of both sides of their mouth.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, what's new?
Politicians
what?
Might do that.
What's
never happens.
Yeah.
Never.
You try not to be cynical, you know. What you don't want to become is cynical about politics. But Robert in Fairport sees politics all over this. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. If this was a legitimate concern, Dianne Feinstein would have raised this at the very beginning of the confirmation process. She sat on this for, a month and a half? I just look at this as the nuclear option. This was intended to be deployed only if there was nothing that could find on Kavanaugh's legal record, legal background that they could use against him. It was brought up at the worst possible time for him to defend himself. And the whole thing just reeks of politics, as you can imagine. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Yeah, so Robert, I'm going to let the panel hit that. But before I do, I just kind of want to take your temperature on this. What percentage confident are you that Dr. Ford's allegations are accurate?
I think that it's less than 50-50. I mean, the thing is, if you can't identify where something took place, what year it took place, how you got there and how you got home, I just think that I don't know how you defend yourself against an accusation like that if the accuser is allowed to not nail down details that would allow someone to say, hey, I was there, or, hey, I was not there.
Okay, so less than 50-50. Robert, thanks for the phone call. So Robert is saying, look at the process. He viewed this as a nuclear option for the Democrats. Melanie, I saw you kind of reacting a little bit. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, that wouldn't surprise me. I'll be honest. I think this is politics, and it wouldn't surprise me if it was held to the most appropriate time or make the biggest splash. What's made this so urgent, though, was President Trump giving the FBI literally 7 days or less to try to put out some kind of investigation report. So to make it nuclear, that's what happened when Trump put this timeline on it, not when it was brought out. This easily could have been deflated or at least strung out for a while the American public thought about it, forgot about it, whatever they do. And then the investigation could have gone on for 2 or 3 weeks, and he still could have been elected before midterms. But no, you know, trying to push this through and doing 5 days, I think, is really what made this nuclear.
Okay. Sharon's?
We make it easy for you, don't
Sharon's,
we?
Sharon's, do you see politics in this?
Of course.
Yes, of course. There are always politics in the nominations for Supreme Court. But even though there are politics, that doesn't lessen the legitimacy of the claims or questions or the way things are being done.
So we don't really know what happened behind the scenes, and I don't know if we'll ever know what happened behind the scenes. And it's political fodder both ways, I think, to, you know, if it had come out earlier, then it might not have been so politicized that you know, here's this issue being raised solely for purposes of defeating it at this late date. I've been asked questions on FBI background checks before, and they're very thorough. They go through a lot. So, you know, we don't know what information, who had or why it was held. The other Sharon is absolutely correct. We've got information now that people are contending what they're contending. And you can't, it's what once the horse is out of the barn, or the old phrase, you can't put it back in. You have to look at that somehow. The other piece of it, though, is that what is equally relevant and people need to look at is the testimony. And the, for example, I don't know if anybody mentioned it before, but former Supreme Court Judge John Paul Stevens has now said that while he supported Kavanaugh previously, he can't support him now because of the partisan nature of his remarks. So it's just a different ballgame than it might have been had it come out earlier.
And a different ballgame had Judge Kavanaugh more ably and maturely handled and thought about his reaction instead of just spewing forth the first thing that came into his mind.
Well, I confess, when he opened his statement last Thursday, I thought he was withdrawing, but certainly not. And it does look like he's now headed for confirmation. I got a lot more phone calls to get through. Can I just ask, and I'll ask Chris Thomas as the male attorney on the panel, a lot of talk about, well, men should be afraid, you know, you should be worried about any accusation being able to ruin your life, etc. Do you feel that way as an attorney, as a someone with family, friends that you think about? Is that a concern for you? The due process is going to be gone, and that as President Trump recently said, President Trump said it's a good time to be a woman, it's a bad, dangerous time to be a man.
Well, I think that's still, I think that's fairly comedic, actually. You know, all you have to do is take a look at, you know, I think we only just had Equal Pay Day not that long ago.
So let's sort of like boil the ridiculousness out of the president's comment and just ask you directly, though, do you think there's a legitimate concern that it's too easy to accuse usually a man and that men are at risk? That's the real risk.
No, I wouldn't say it's too easy. I would have to see, there's a pendulum that's swinging here. And you take a look at the Title IX cases that are going through the courts right now. And until fairly recently, the courts, and I'm speaking obviously in large generalities here, courts would simply rubber stamp what colleges and universities were doing with respect to alleged sex assaults on campus. And typically those were accusations by young women against young men, and the school, without really any process or very little process, might just simply rubber stamp the decision that was made by the university or the college to expel the young man. And the pendulum has, over about the last 2 to 3 years, begun to swing back to the middle. And I think that what we're seeing here with this nomination is a swinging of the pendulum to, you know, to that point where, you know, some men have that concern. Frankly, I don't think it's a tremendous concern, because in this context, it is not, these aren't criminal charges that are being laid. You know, in terms of Judge Kavanaugh, he's going to be confirmed because of the power dynamic in the Senate. And even if he weren't, what was the worst thing that was going to happen to him? He's going to still be a lifetime appointee on a circuit court of appeals.
Can I just, want to say,
you can all weigh in, sure.
I just want to say that there is a point that that I think is a really important point, and that is that I think that the Me Too movement started because women didn't have a voice for so long. I think the danger is that with the Me Too movement, sometimes the people who are accused don't have a voice either. And I'm never in favor of a situation where people don't have voices. I think they need to have voices.
I think that the rules are changing, definitely changing. And I think that it's important for men to realize that they're changing. And I have children in college, going to college, and I've lectured both the girls and the boys about the changing in rules and how to be much more careful in the way they handle things.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Okay. Let's go ahead. We have to lock the phones for a moment because there's so many phone calls. So let me just try to get through as many as we can here. A long, long list here. I think this is still Noel. Is that you, Noel? That's not. Is that Noel? That's Gary in Bloomfield. Go ahead, Gary.
Oh, okay. Gary, yes, thank you. My concern was with the gentleman who was berating Ford's testimony. Her testimony was
Are you there, Gary?
Yeah, I got it. I'm sorry, I have to turn the radio off because I was
That's always a good thing. If you call a radio show, turn the radio off, listen through the phone. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah. Well, two things. One is her testimony. I have a psychological background, and her testimony was exactly what you would expect from someone who is suffering that kind of trauma. They do not report immediately. It takes a long, long time to come to that conclusion that this needs to be. And, of course, seeing someone who violated you being promoted to the highest deliberative position in the country would certainly kind of shake you into saying, well, that can't be, you know, and start the process of reporting. But the other thing is what really got me in terms of this particular hearing was it's a job interview. It's not a criminal court case. And for the Republicans to try to convert, I don't want to use the word conflate because that's a word that nobody, the general population doesn't think about. They're trying to deceive people into holding, like this is supposed to be a criminal case. It is not a criminal case. This is a lifetime job, and the founders of the, you know, that set up these rules made it a lifetime job, knowing that it's a very special consideration. It should certainly not have partisan politics involved.
Well, the Supreme Court has unfortunately been partisan almost from the beginning, and this is not the first time. I appreciate the phone call, Gary. I will just remind the audience that earlier this hour, our panel was talking about the fact that if you conflate the idea of a standard of due process with what is effectively a job interview, that may be for effect, but there also may be some members of the Senate. Everyone will set their own standard here. If you are running a company's hiring department, your standards may be different than mine. Every senator may have a different standard, and some might say, look, I'm keeping the same standards as I would for a criminal prosecution. Others might say, no, I need to have just a vague concern that this guy committed sexual assault, and then we'll move on to the next candidate. It does appear to be breaking along party lines, but let me just ask the panel, one of the things he keyed on was he was impressed with Dr. Ford's testimony. Now, I've seen analysis, and it's interesting. If you see the actual questions asked, were the answers essentially direct answers, yes or no? Hers were in the 90% plus range, and Judge Kavanaugh's were not. Now, one of the examples is Judge Kavanaugh was asked repeatedly, did you drink to excess? Did you drink to becoming blackout drunk? And he gave some, one time he was asked, did you drink to the point where you were blacked out? And he said, look, I got into Yale. I was number one in my class. You know, that's not at all related to the question, but that may be a frustrated person who's just kind of sick of being challenged with the same thing over and over again. So as attorneys, should we be weighing how many direct answers each participant in that testimony gave? Does that matter?
Absolutely. I think more than direct answers, what impressed me about the testimony was the disrespect he showed some of the senators when answering. And I know...
And occasionally apologized for it.
Not at the time. Later he came back.
Yeah, later did. Yeah.
After, I'm assuming, someone clued him in on to do that. But in any event, during a trial, from time to time, you have witnesses on the stand who turn around and try to ask you questions. Well, wouldn't you do that? And in a belligerent tone, as Judge Kavanaugh had.
That doesn't last very long in a courtroom, I imagine.
No, it doesn't, because
the judge shuts it down because it is so absolutely foreboding to do that. And I put that on the list of other foreboding things that Judge Kavanaugh did, to come back to my original statement, which is he lacks the judicial temperament to sit on the Supreme Court.
But it's interesting, because if you're judging credibility, one of the ways that you judge credibility is whether somebody listened to the question and answered the question. And yet, it seems as though that standard has not been applied to this hearing. I'm not sure why. But it's a very powerful way of weighing credibility.
Above reproach. That's what you want your Supreme Court, quite frankly, any judge to be, but particularly sitting on the Supreme Court, you want them to be above reproach. And I think we've all heard doesn't necessarily put him in that boat.
Chris Thomas?
Yeah, I don't think that I agree with you, Melanie, but I'm not necessarily sure that that's what the president's looking for. The president's looking for a lockdown certain vote for the next 35 years on issues conservative. And I think
that's what he's got.
Actually, if you want to get into real political weeds, I don't know that Donald Trump cares about the next 35 years in this country, but he knows that the Federalist Society does, and he knows that a certain portion of the base does, and he knows that if he can deliver that on the bench, he can, in 2020, feel a lot more energized.
And particularly before the midterms.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
And by the way, I know people hate the both sides-ism, but Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said she doesn't even think she can retire until there's a Democrat in the White House. Things have gotten very politicized, whether they were intended to or not. Chloe in Fairport is next on the phone. Go ahead, Chloe.
Hi, this is weird. I've never done this before. Hi, people. I just wanted to say that we can either confirm or deny either way, and the concept of innocent until proven guilty goes both ways. You can't sit here and say, oh, well, she's not credible, all of this, whatnot. We haven't really even looked into the deepest parts of her claims, to be honest with you, and we can't condemn Brett Kavanaugh at the same time, because we have no information. That's not how this works. And being that his reactions, my lord, were not even slightly impartial, and kind of displayed just this ridiculous childlike nature in this man, I don't really want him to be on the Supreme Court personally. But I mean, and also if in fact Blasey Ford, whatever, is not telling the truth. I'm not saying she is or isn't. I do think that in this kind of a case, that person should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, because people who actually are victims of sexual abuse and child molestation do take forever to come forward, because as a society we shame them and various other things. And were it her muddying the waters even further, that's just not right. I believe that she should be prosecuted if that were the case.
She should
we
be.
Don't know.
Okay. She should be. Thank you, Chloe. Okay. So let's say she comes out tomorrow and says, just kidding, everybody, made it all up. Should she go to prison, like Chloe says?
You know, I think that's what Chloe's argument is she's kind of on that fence of, we don't know. You know, we don't know if Kavanaugh's lying. We don't know if she's lying. And we haven't seen the FBI report. And we may never see it. So I think that's kind of her point is, okay, if she comes forward and says, I didn't do it, is there a ramification for her? And if he comes forward and we find out he did, what's the ramification for him? It is a job interview. Is there a ramification at this point for either of them? And I think that's what Chloe's trying to say.
Yeah. perhaps?
Well, so let me just kind of bring this down to practical aspects of it. So theoretically, if you testify falsely, then you're committing perjury and you can be prosecuted for committing perjury. I started my career in the district attorney's office. I'll never forget the time that somebody admitted to welfare fraud on the stand, and I contacted the welfare authorities about prosecuting it, and their response was, it's cheaper for us to provide the public assistance than it is to prosecute. It's easier for us to not prosecute. So a decision, you know, the question you asked, Evan, is whether somebody should be prosecuted. People should always tell the truth. They should always tell the truth under oath. If you look at the statistics and the readings on it, people tell the truth approximately the same amount, whether they are or are not under oath. And I don't believe that people really fear the consequence of being prosecuted for perjury if they lie.
Isn't that interesting, by the way, that they tell the truth at roughly the same rate?
Yeah, it is. And again, it harkens back to what the oath is. It's from a different time. Maybe people who testify should be hooked up to a polygraph now that we've got different procedures.
And Chloe, but, I'll just close the loop on your call by saying it was a little odd to hear you lecturing a panel of lawyers about how they should understand that the burden of proof goes both ways. Not even really sure. I mean, I think I understand the point you were trying to make, but the reason I invited them is because they do this all the time. That's part of the job.
Well, and I think what Chloe's also asking is pointing to is this, there is at least in New York, a charge called falsely reporting an incident. And if you falsely report an incident to law enforcement, guess what? You can get prosecuted.
Okay.
And those do get prosecuted on a pretty regular basis.
And should.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. So that point, Chloe, I think is well taken. If Dr. Ford comes out and says, wasn't that funny? I made it all up. Well, yes, that's a problem. Paul in Brighton. Go ahead, Paul. Are you there, Paul?
I'd like to preface. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Keep it tight.
Yeah, I'd like to preface my statement by saying that I am sick about Trump. I am sick about the way he's taking his country, and I'm sick about him stacking the courts, including the Kavanaugh. But I would like to talk about if the shoe was on the other foot, and if the Democrats control the Senate and the presidency, and the Democrats brought a decisive candidate that was quite left-leaning, and then at the last minute, the Republicans come up with some information that couldn't quite be proved. Would the Democrats act any differently than the Republicans? And what I want to say is the problem here is the polarization of the United States, more so for me than appointing another conservative to the court. The country is frozen, and Donald Trump has so much responsibility for this because of the person that he is.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair question on what would the Democrats do if things were flipped here.
Paul, I think we'd be looking exactly the same thing.
Oh,
I really, truly do. I think we've got such a partisan breakup. I think Sharon's going to disagree with me, but I think we've got such a partisan breakup in D.C. and throughout the United States that we would be looking at potentially exactly the same thing.
I don't think Democratic women, largely speaking, would tolerate the exact same reaction.
But that's not what Paul was saying. He didn't put out that it was a sex
assault. What would the leadership of the party do?
He wasn't saying that it was a sex assault. He was saying just generally if the Republicans pulled out,
allegations.
Yeah, allegations.
In my own mind, I'm thinking if the script was flipped just in terms of party and it was the same kind of allegation, what would the Democratic Party do? And the question is, the best answer so far is that until recently, nothing. Look at Bill Clinton. Look at so many years of nothing, nothing, nothing.
But now, look at Al Franken.
Look at Al Franken now.
Yeah.
Of course, Keith Ellison is sort of a gray area for Democrats at best.
He is.
But I think what we're seeing is it's still hard to move the needle in your parties, but the people who are actually outraged about sexual assault, real sexual assault survivors, of which there are millions, have spoken up in a way that makes it hard to ignore now. And so I think maybe that is starting to move, but I don't know, Paul.
Evan, I think it also depends who's, if you're looking at really flipping exactly the script and we have a Trump-like figure that happens to be a Democrat,
you know, he's going to bully just about everybody in line on his party, too. So I think if you really flip it and look at exactly what we have now and just flip the Republicans and Democrats, I think we would see potentially the same thing going on with the possibility of maybe another woman or two stepping out.
But. Okay, Sharon?
I think the Republicans and Democrats both play politics, but in very different ways. So for the Democrats, I'm not seeing an Orrin Hatch and a Mitch McConnell out there bellowing and spewing. They go about it in a different way. So I think that they would play games trying to get their nominee confirmed, of course, but I think it would be by very different rules.
Yeah, and Paul, I would look up the story of State Senate candidate Julia Salazar for the Democrats downstate, who, you know, was sort of an inspirational figure, only her biography doesn't really check out, but as that started to come out in the press, she still wins her election in the Democratic primary and is still supported by many Democratic stakeholders. And if that were a Republican, boy, Democrats would be trying to run that candidate out of town. So, yeah, it's tough. As we close the hour here, I want to thank all of our guests for being here and just ask all four, as attorneys with a lot of experience, not just in your field of law, but observing what's going on in the national scene, does anybody think Brett Kavanaugh is not getting confirmed? Chris, you've already said it. He's getting confirmed tomorrow.
Yeah, and what I would simply add is this whole process, this last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, lays utterly bare and naked the fact that this is about power.
Yeah. Confirmed, no question.
Confirmed, no question. Sharon?
I agree.
Okay.
I agree, but oh, I cling to hope tenaciously.
We're going to see, and as we told you earlier this hour, and if you've been listening to NPR News throughout the day here, the cloture vote went 51-49 in favor of moving forward to a full Senate confirmation vote. That coming tomorrow, and a lot of the assumption now is that Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed. I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Sharon Kelly Sayers, Sharon Stiller, Chris Thomas, Melanie Walk, all attorneys bringing their expertise and background and experience. Thank you very much for your insight this hour. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, short break. More connections coming up.